The door was unlocked, the lights were on, the street outside looked normal. Inside the store, a young woman stood alone behind a counter, scrolling between work and the rest of her life. A man had come in once. He left. Then he came back. Nothing about him triggered an alarm. Nothing stopped him at the door. Minutes later, the space went quiet. There was no argument heard, no struggle witnessed, no one close enough to step in. When someone finally walked inside, it was already too late. A life had ended in the middle of an ordinary workday. The question came fast and never slowed down. How does someone die like this in public, in daylight, without warning? How does a stranger move through a city, enter a store, and leave behind irreversible damage? As police began pulling video, freezing frames, and tracing steps, the story grew beyond one victim and one suspect. It became a test of systems meant to notice danger before it turns fatal, and a reminder that some warnings arrive quietly in a single text message sent seconds before everything stops. Chapter 1. The Open Door on Croft Avenue. January 13, 2022, early afternoon. The furniture store sat along Croft Avenue in Los Angeles, clean-lined and quiet. Floor-to-ceiling windows let in winter light. The door stayed unlocked during business hours. Customers came and went without friction. Brianna Kupfer was working alone that day. She was 24 years old, a graduate student at UCLA. She had taken the retail job to support school and living expenses. Friends described her as driven, warm, focused. Inside the store, she handled customers, answered questions, and kept watch over the space by herself. Security cameras were mounted inside. They captured the front door, the showroom floor, the counter. There was no security guard, no second employee scheduled. Shortly after 1 p.m., a man entered the store. He did not rush. He did not raise his voice. He walked through the space, looked around, and left. The footage showed nothing overtly criminal, just a stranger passing through. Minutes later, he returned. Brianna noticed him. Something about his presence made her uneasy. It was not enough to call police, not enough to lock the door, but it was enough to register as a warning. She picked up her phone. At 1:28 p.m., she sent a text message to a friend. The message said there was a sketchy guy in the store and she felt uncomfortable. She added that she was alone. It was the last message she ever sent. Inside the store, the man moved closer. What happened next unfolded beyond the view of the front windows. There were no customers inside, no witnesses on the sidewalk aware of what was happening behind the glass. At some point, Brianna was stabbed. The attack was fast and brutal. Emergency responders would later determine that she died from multiple stab wounds. There was no evidence of robbery, no signs of a prolonged confrontation. After the attack, the man left the store. Surveillance cameras captured him walking out the door and heading down the street. His pace was steady. He did not run. He blended into the afternoon. Inside, the store went silent. Time passed before anyone realized something was wrong. A customer eventually entered the store and saw Brianna collapsed on the floor. Blood was visible. The scene was immediately alarming. The customer ran back outside and called emergency services. Paramedics and police arrived within minutes. They attempted life-saving measures, but Brianna was pronounced dead at the scene. The location was secured. Yellow tape went up. Officers stood at the door where customers had walked freely less than an hour earlier. News spread quickly. A UCLA student, a young woman, killed while working a shift in a public store. Detectives from the Los Angeles Police Department's homicide unit took over the scene. They reviewed the surveillance footage first. The cameras showed the suspect clearly, his clothing, his face, his movements before and after the attack. The video became the case's starting point. Detectives noted how ordinary the day looked until it wasn't. No forced entry, no chase, no immediate trigger visible on camera, just a stranger entering a store with an unlocked door and leaving behind a dead employee. Investigators canvassed the area. They collected footage from nearby businesses. They spoke with shop owners and pedestrians. No one reported hearing screams. No one intervened. The text message Brianna sent was recovered from her phone. It became a key piece of evidence, not for what it explained, but for what it revealed. She sensed danger. She had no time to act on it. By evening, police released still images of the suspect to the public. They described him as a man seen entering and exiting the store around the time of the killing. They asked for help identifying him. The question facing detectives was immediate and pressing. Who was the man in the footage? And how did a warning felt but unspoken turn into a fatal moment with no interruption at all? Chapter 2, A Face Without a Name. By nightfall, the images were everywhere. Los Angeles Police Department released still frames taken from surveillance cameras inside the store and from nearby buildings. The man's face was clear. His posture was relaxed. He wore dark clothing. Nothing about him stood out except the timing. Detectives mapped his movements minute by minute. Video showed him walking the neighborhood before entering the store. He passed other businesses. He crossed streets. He looked like someone moving with no destination pressure. After leaving the store, he continued the same way. No sprint, no visible panic. That calm became its own red flag. Homicide detectives expanded the search radius. They pulled footage from restaurants, apartment complexes, and street cameras along Croft Avenue and surrounding blocks. Each clip extended the timeline. Each one confirmed the same thing. The suspect moved freely through public space before and after the killing. Police asked for the public's help. Tips began coming in almost immediately. Some callers recognized the man's face. Others reported seeing someone matching the description in different parts of the city. None of the early tips confirmed his identity. Behind the scenes, detectives ran facial recognition comparisons against known offenders. They cross-checked arrest photos. They searched for matching features in prior case files. The process took time. Meanwhile, the city reacted. News outlets framed the killing as random and unprovoked. Public fear rose quickly. Retail workers posted online about working alone. Parents questioned safety near campuses. Business owners asked what protections existed when a single employee was left on a sales floor. Police increased patrols in the area, but the suspect was already gone. The break came through a combination of tips and records. Detectives identified the man as Sean Laval Smith. He was 31 years old. He had no fixed address. He had prior arrests involving violence. Those records were established facts from law enforcement databases. What mattered most was that his face now had a name. Once identified, police tracked his movements through additional surveillance footage and transit patterns. On January 15, 2 days after the killing, officers located Smith in Pasadena. The arrest happened without resistance. Smith did not attempt to flee. He did not carry out an attack during the arrest. He was taken into custody and booked on suspicion of murder. Police held a press conference later that day. They confirmed the arrest and identified Smith publicly. They stated that the killing appeared unprovoked and that there was no known connection between Smith and Brianna Kupfer. They did not offer a motive. That absence left another question hanging. How did someone with a documented violent past remain on the street, moving freely through busy neighborhoods until the moment he crossed the wrong threshold? Records showed Smith had been released from custody months earlier following an arrest for assault with a deadly weapon. The details of that release were documented, but not explained in full during early briefings. What was clear was that multiple systems had intersected and failed to stop the final outcome. For detectives, the case had moved from unknown suspect to confirmed arrest. But for the public, the fear shifted instead of fading. The manhunt was over. The deeper unease was not. If this attack had no warning signs that triggered intervention and no immediate motive that explained it, then the risk felt harder to define and harder to contain. The case was no longer just about finding a killer. It was about understanding how visible danger can exist in plain sight, pass through multiple points of contact, and still reach a victim working alone behind an unlocked door. Chapter 3, The Debate That Followed. The court process began quietly. Prosecutors filed murder charges against Sean Laval Smith. Court records outlined his prior arrests and his release status at the time of the killing. These were documented facts, drawn from official filings and law enforcement history. The case moved into the slow structure of the legal system. Outside the courtroom, the conversation accelerated. News coverage expanded beyond the crime itself. Commentators focused on homelessness, untreated mental illness, and gaps between arrest, release, and supervision. These discussions reflected public reaction, not courtroom findings. No medical diagnosis was presented in court records at that stage. Allegations and speculations circulated elsewhere, often without distinction. Brianna Kupfer's family stepped forward with restraint. In public statements, they spoke about her life, not her death. They described her plans, her kindness, her discipline. They avoided political framing. They asked for accountability without turning her name into a slogan. Their message was clear. This was not an abstract policy failure. This was a person lost in a place where she should have been safe. City officials responded under pressure. Los Angeles leaders announced increased patrols in retail corridors. Task forces were mentioned. Reviews were promised. These responses were documented in press briefings, though specific long-term changes were not immediately defined. Retail workers across the city reassessed their own vulnerability. Some stores adjusted staffing. Others added panic buttons or changed hours. Many did nothing, citing cost and feasibility. The case became a reference point. When later violent incidents occurred, Brianna Kupfer's name resurfaced in news articles and public meetings. It stood for a type of crime that unsettled people more than targeted violence, an attack with no relationship, no warning, and no clear motive. In court, the focus narrowed again. Evidence, timelines, surveillance footage, text records. The legal system worked within its limits, addressing one defendant and one charge. But the larger question remained unresolved. What protections exist for people who work alone in public-facing jobs? What responsibility do cities hold when warning signs appear but do not meet thresholds for intervention? And how many quiet moments of unease go unspoken before they turn irreversible? There was no clean answer. Brianna Kupfer's death did not close a chapter. It opened one that continues to surface whenever safety, visibility, and prevention collide. The unlocked door on Croft Avenue became a symbol not because it was rare, but because it was ordinary. And that is what made the loss impossible to dismiss.